Hello and welcome to the Scottish Song Guide with the Sorries. I'm Douglas.
And I'm Marty.
And in this week's episode, we are going to be looking into the song The Bonnie Lass of Fife.
There once was a troop of Irish dragoons come marching down through Fife, oh. And the captain's fallen in love with a very bonnie lass, and her name it is cried Pretty Peggy.
So The Bonnie Lass of Fife is obviously a song from the northeast of Scotland, despite rumours to the contrary by other bands in other places. And I think because it's from there and it's so popular, it's one of those songs that I don't really remember when I first heard it. I think it was in my folks' Corey's Live album, which is probably what did it. But I heard it, loads and loads of different people singing it, because it was a really popular song. It is kind of indigenous, within Scotland anyway, but I think certainly in the northeast particularly, because of the proximity of the events and the locations used. So what about you then, Doug? What about you for the way that you came to this song or the first time you heard it?
Well, again, a bit like you, it's a little difficult to remember exactly when, because it's probably one of those songs that was really embedded. You know, the tune, I feel like I've always kind of known. I know we sort of, you spoke about that with Dumbarton's Drums last week, but it feels a bit like the same with Bonnie Lass. I think it's so ubiquitous. I mean, there have been so many versions of it. And from our point of view, I guess before we talk about the song more specifically, in terms of its history, for us, it was one of the first songs that we ever played. I think two guitars was how we started off with it. I then started playing the mandolin, but it's been one which has been near enough a staple for us right through.
Although when we came to it, we had to, like everybody else just about who's done a version of this, kind of had to come to working out, okay, so there's at least 13 verses which are kind of well known and current. That's assuming that you sing the version that we sing. You've got to kind of chop it up and work out what order you're going to sing the verses in, because there isn't a definite. And I remember looking at it at the time and thinking, well, you could put this verse here and swing them around. And actually, we did chop them up and move them around from the way that we'd heard it, but we ended up putting them almost in the same order that has traditionally been sung from, you know, way back mid-20th century recordings and things like that.
Yeah, I think because in terms of the narrative, it was the way that made most sense, you know, to us, and therefore, no surprise that other people had felt the same when we looked back.
Well, I suppose because it's not, and I think that's the thing about this song, which makes it really interesting and actually a bit of a step away for us in terms of the podcast, because most of the podcast stuff we've done up to date has been to songs that we could sort of say, okay, this was by Burns, or this is by Carolina Oliphant, or this is by Walter Scott, or this is by Hogg, but this one is a traditional song.
Yeah, I mean, those other songs that we've done in the podcast, very much part of the folk song and very much shaped by the folk tradition, but you're right, with a lot of the songs we've looked at in the past, we can go to a starting point, or at least an early point, and say, okay, this person had a lot to do with how this song was carried forward and so on. Whereas this one really is from all sorts of sources, which is great. You know, it's, as you say, folk tradition.
It is, and I think when we were talking about this before, it's just that sense that with this song particularly, it's almost like a little piece of archaeology. You've got to kind of dig down through all the different layers and the different versions of the song from all over the place. And, you know, different language, different, just the way that it's been rearranged and reworked so radically over the years, partly because there wasn't a kind of definitive this is how you do it written down in the early days. It came out of the oral tradition, largely at least.
There's many a bonny teen in the streets of Aberdeen, but the flute of the mob bides in Fife.
So, having said all that, how old is this song? Can we tell how old it is?
Well, I mean, there's so much conjecture about it, and the lyrics, as we'll maybe go on to talk about, perhaps put the events from the song in different time periods, or they've been said to be in different time periods. But what we know for a fact is that the song did appear in print in a broadside ballad in the kind of earliest years of the 19th century. It's thought to have been at round about sort of 1820 to 1840, round about then, broadside ballads appeared with the song entitled Pretty Peggy of Derby. Now, obviously, that controversially suggests an English setting for the song, although that version goes on to mention Kilkenny. So there's, you know, all sorts of, again, conjecture. Okay, so if it's talking about Kilkenny, is it the Pretty Peggy of Derby? Could it have been Pretty Peggy of Derry? You know, there's one broadside ballad which had the title as Derry, but in the song, it's mentioned as Derby. So, you know, the...
But in essence, what you're saying is that my heartfelt idea of the Bonnie Lass of Fife being rigidly locked in the northeast, you could at least suggest that it might actually be either an English or an Irish song.
Well, you know, Marty, you being a dyed-in-the-wool, proud Aberdonian, it's been my duty and my raison d'etre, you might say, of our time in the Sorries to undermine Aberdeen at every turn. So if I've managed to do that successfully in this podcast, then it will That's be right. a job well done.
So this is your verbal attempt to take a sledgehammer to one of the pillars of the culture.
Exactly.
Thanks.
But yeah, as I say, so we have it in print from the early 19th century, and then it begins to appear in collections later on in the 19th century. There's kind of similar words as the Bonnie Lass of Fife in William Christie's Traditional Balladeers, the first volume of those in 1876. Then it appears in 1899 in The Vagabond Songs and Ballads of Scotland as the song Bonnie Barbro, which is Robert Ford, this is his collection. And he says that he collected it in Dundee, but the song's origins are Derby. And he says, I noted it from singing of a woman in Dundee. She'd memorised it from her childhood in the Carsagowrie. And he then says, in Aberdeenshire, I'm aware, Fivey is substituted for Derby, but not to improve matters.
So he's on your side, is what you're saying.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. But that then kicks off a huge host of, you know, the Greg Duncan collection.
Yeah.
They have loads of versions collected at kind of the early 20th century. And then Cecil Sharp and Olive Campbell collect American versions a bit later on. And that's kind of where...
If I can just put a case here, there is a case that says that, yes, it is possible that it migrated up from England. But given that there's a large argument and a large set of evidence that suggests that English broadsides would often borrow, steal or take Scottish songs because they were really into Scottish ballads, and that actually it's just as likely, and I'm going to say much more likely, as it travelled down from the northeast to Scotland and was then co-opted by some unscrupulous printers in England.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Well, we're trying to make every bit as much money by exploiting the culture as all the printers in Scotland were, but there we are.
Yeah, yeah. So that's when we kind of first saw it in print. But we mentioned quickly there that there were clues within the song which can help to firm up the date of the song, or at least give us ideas of when the song was written, or at least when the events in the song were set.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. It's you want to say that it's when it's written, but of course it's just when it's set.
Yeah.
And even that is kind of vague. You can narrow it down helpfully to about somewhere within about 150 years. So sometime between the mid-17th century to the end of the 18th, probably. So for instance, the first thing to say is that the point of view that it's told from is that of a young cadet, or at least a young man. And in fact, there is an early version of it that has a young cadet. And the girl refuses to marry him because he's a young cadet. She obviously doesn't have the resources that the girl in Dumbarton's Drums had to try and buy him a commission.
Right.
But it seems to me that there's maybe some kind of trace of that still left in the song. Because he's obviously, the narrator of this is obviously kind of partly in love with her himself. Even if he does actually note that it's the captain that's pursuing her. it's almost like he's not going to get a look in, but he talks about how beautiful she is. The whole chorus sits back, you know, the flower of them all bides in Fivey. Yeah, the flower of them all lives in Fivey, is really what that means. So I think there's that kind of aspect of military rank, I suppose, as being significant within it. And of course, military history does kind of help. There's a great article by Sandy Sheen from 2002 in the Leopard magazine, which you can find. I think it's actually, there's a link to it in the bottom of the Wikipedia page, actually. And he puts a really, really cogent argument together up to a point where he says that everyone says it's Montrose taking Fivey Castle. This is when the song is set, in 1644. But he says, no, that's not right. It's 1645. Now, the problem is Montrose didn't have any dragoons. But what he says, he argues, is that actually what happened was they were marching to Aberdeen, but the Irish infantry that were part of Montrose's army, this is the Duke of Montrose's army, the Irish infantry actually had already sacked Aberdeen. So the Aberdonians sent a delegation up to Turriff to, allegedly anyway, buy him off and persuade him not to allow the Irish infantry into Aberdeen again when he came to occupy it for a second time. So he agreed to that, but except when he actually sent his men in, when there was a covenanting army that was coming pretty close to Aberdeen. So he needed to reinforce them, but he didn't have any other troops. So he got round this by mounting the Irish infantry on horses, making them dragoons. So they were basically infantry who fought on foot, but arrived mounted horses, like cavalry. Yeah, exactly. So he says that's where the dragoons parts comes from, which I think is actually, it's kind of a reasonably persuasive argument. But he then goes off in a very, very elaborate sort of setup, suppositionally asserting the exact events that took place that might have led to this.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know, but it's a really interesting article. So you've got the middle of the 17th century, potentially, from Sandy Sheen's point of view. Other people think it was down to the formation of the Irish Dragoon Guards. Now, there was a regiment of them in about the 1680s, but they were never called Dragoons until the 1780s. People think that it was they were marching from Fort George, which was established after the 1745 rebellion, down to Aberdeen, and that Fivey is a reasonable stopping point, which it is. There's an old folk singer who was recording in the 50s and 60s called Jock Duncan, who says that it's actually the precise geography of Fivey that is the reason why this all happens, because there was a ford at Gicht. You know, it's the drums they did beat all across the braes of Gicht. Well, Gicht had a ford over the River Eithen, which is why the main kind of military road went down through there.
Yeah.
Gicht Castle, by the way, was Byron's ancestral home. His mother sold it to pay off debts, so Byron would have grown up in Gicht had it not been for his mother falling in hard times. But anyway, that's a by the by. So there's this issue about that, and then you start looking at the language. Now, there is, in some of the stuff that we don't sing, some of the verses we chose to miss out, there's a really interesting line which occurs quite a lot of places. And it said, the verse is, what would your mammy think if she heard the guineas clink and the hod boys playing afore you? Oh, what would your mammy think when she heard the guineas clink and kent you had married a soldier? Oh. Now, it's the hoboys word. Hot boys is what it looks like when you see it in print. This is an old French way of saying oboe, because it means high wood or loud wood. The oboe doesn't get invented until the mid-17th century, but quickly becomes the main melody instrument of the early military bands. But then by 1770, everyone starts calling it an oboe, yeah, instead of calling it a hautbois. So logically, that kind of rules out the Irish Dragoon Guards, because they're not formed until after that.
But it's bra, captain's lady for to be. It's bra to be a captain's lady, oh. It's bra to run to row, and they follow at his word, and they ride when your captain is ready.
The thing about the Bonnie Lass of Fivey is that I mentioned the narration from the point of view of this young soldier who appears to be one of the captain's soldiers. But actually, the main part of it is actually the captain himself speaking and the Bonnie Lass herself replying. And the version that we do actually doesn't have her speaking quite so much. She just speaks enough to actually say, no, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah.
Valentina Bold has a great piece on the kind of feminist angle of all this, but she also points out the significance of the fact that it's an Irish soldier. Because when I've always thought when you were you sang the line about I never did intend to go to a foreign land, and I always thought that was just going away with the army.
On campaign somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But Dante the Bold certainly seems to suggest, and others have suggested, that this makes a difference. Because when this song gets taken into the Irish folk scene, obviously the Irish Dragoon is not a foreigner, if I can use that like that. So yeah. He's not treated as such. So in their versions, the girl actually is kind of more at fault. Whereas the interesting thing about the Bonnie Lass of Fife in the Scottish version is she stands up for herself and doesn't take any nonsense. And actually, it's not her that suffers at the end, which is kind of refreshing in its own way. And I think that a lot of the verses that we don't sing are just further of the captain trying to persuade her by offering her all sorts of gifts and bribes, basically, to come and marry him. And then her saying, no, I don't need any of that. Kind of like, yeah. it reminds me a little bit of Ettrick Valley, actually.
Yeah, that's right. He's kind of going, oh, come with me and you'll have this. And she's like, well, what would I do with that?
Yeah, I don't need that.
I was just going to say, in the original broadside ballad, the Pretty Peggy of Derby, there's a bit more of a sexualized kind of context there,
yeah.
Where he says, I'll tell you now as I told you before, and why should you leave me? Oh, tease me no more. And then she's like, a soldier's wife I never will be, and a soldier shall never lay in bed with me, for I will make him stand with his hat in his hand when he stands in presence of my company.
Yeah, yeah.
So it gives her a really strong voice of kind of going, who do you think you are? Not a chance.
There's some remnants of that in a load of the versions. It's some of the stuff that we didn't, once we'd kind of established the conflict between them, we didn't go into it in any greater depth.
Yeah.
But there's some brilliant verses, like, for it's I'll gie ye ribbons for your bonny gowden hair, I'll gie ye a necklace o' amber, oh, I'll gie ye silken petticoats wi' frills doon to your knee, if you'll convoy me doon to my chomer, oh. And the next verse, she replies, and I'd scorn to be seen in your chomer, oh. So he basically, it's not marriage he's proposing,
yeah,
it's beyond that. Or less than that,
yeah.
Depending on how you look at it. And she basically just slams him right back and says, nah, not happening. On you go, on your way.
Joe gone.
Never do intend a soldier's lady for to be. I never will marry a soldier. I never do intend to day a foreign land. And right when my captain he is ready.
So, Doug, the version that we sing is pretty much the version that John Strachan was singing back in the 1950s when he was recorded. But is that the only version that's been popular?
In a word, no. John Strachan, as you say, was recorded, I think, 1951 by the American song collector Alan Lomax, and he was recorded in Aberdeenshire. But the tune that he sings, which, as you say, is very similar to ours, there was a recording of that made by James Madison Carpenter, another American song collector, back in the very early 30s from another Aberdeenshire woman called Belle Duncan. He recorded her singing. I mean, it's great, actually. You can hear it in the Vaughan Williams Memorial Library. He recorded on wax cylinders. So, I mean, scratchy doesn't begin to describe it, but you can just pick out the melody as we know it.
There's a brilliant old photograph of Belle Duncan, I think, on the original Library of Congress, or the website for his collection, has a wonderful old photograph of Belle Duncan in her 80s knitting while she's standing getting her photo taken.
So we've got a recorded version of that tune from the 50s, one before that from the 30s. There was actually a record made by a Willie Kemp in 1931 of the Bonnie Lass of Fife, which has arrangement by James Shand, which we can only presume is Jimmy Shand, who would have been in his sort of early mid-20s. He would have been then, so yeah. But yeah. Anyway, but to fly way back and look at the what we have in print, again, we're going to this Pretty Peggy, or Pretty Peggy of Derby, and the tune, or at least something which is recognisable as the tune that we sing being based on, appeared as Pretty Peggy of Derby O in 24 country dances for the year 1782. That was a T. Skillern book. And the tune's in there, just sort of two lines, but you can definitely find phrases in there which relate quite closely to what we've got. And then just after that, I think it was 1795, in James Aird's selection of Scotch, English, Irish and Foreign Airs, the third volume, there's Peggy of Derby or The Dandies, it's called. Now, he says that this is an Irish tune. He just has Irish on it. And that is, again, has some really close similarities to the tune that we sing. And it is pretty much the same as the one that's appeared in that 24 Country Dances, but it's got a couple of little Scotch snaps in it and so on. So yeah. little telltale signs that it's been arranged by a Scottish composer of the time. So we've got that, but then there's an interesting thing happens where it takes another step more closely towards the tune that, as you say, John Strachan had in the 50s and Bill Duncan yeah. sang in the 30s, when in 1807 it appears with completely different lyrics as a song called Eveline's Bower in Thomas Moore's A Selection of Irish Melodies. And in there, there are definite recognisable phrases from our tune.
Yeah.
It then changes at different times. There's William Christie has his traditional ballad airs in the 1870s, and that is interesting because it has a direction slowly and smoothly, is a plain direction, and that's in a minor key. He's arranged that tune from two separate airs heard from his two grandmothers, one for Bonnie Lass and one for Barbara Allen, and he seems to have melded them together and made it a much more melancholy piece. Because, right. I mean, the thing that we always say about this when we're playing it is, you know, oh, it's a good old stomper, stride, clap along and so on. You know, it's played with it.
Yeah.
I mean, we bring it down a little bit.
Only insofar as people don't have to clap when they're talking about death.
But it then changes in the American versions, because we haven't mentioned yet the fact that Cecil Sharp and Olive Campbell collected a whole load of songs in the Appalachians in the sort of early 1900s, which went together in their sort of English folk songs from the Southern Appalachians collections.
Do those texts do the Fivey thing, or are they doing the Derby and Derry thing?
They're slightly different, because this is where the song takes its American turn, which is a really interesting one, where Fivey becomes Fernario, and then we have this line, the captain fell in love with a lady like a dove and they called her Pretty Peggy. Now, this is a sort of verse that comes in the various American versions which appear throughout the 20th century. There's a couple that, as I say, Sharp and Campbell collected with different tunes. But then there are later ones as well, which are quite interesting.
Okay, asking the moronic question. Anyone famous do a version of this from the American version?
If I told you 1960s, you could probably make a stab at guessing. The sort of first version that comes out in the 60s is 1962, Bob Dylan, Pretty Peggy. And he kind of, he uses this Fenario. Funnily enough, he starts his version, well, I've travelled all around this country, but I never did find Fenario. I think with a nod and a wink to the fact that it's been corrupted.
Yeah, yeah.
Dylan's version has got quite a different tune, and it's just kind of a phrase repeated three times at the start of each verse, interspersed with him sort of having an asthma attack in his harmonica.
He speaks now, very highly of your work, though.
Clearly. Now, Joan Baez had a live version out the year after that called Funerio, she called it. So whether, you know, she's playing that live, whether she'd been playing that in, you know, obviously Bob Dylan got a lot from Joan Baez.
But Joan Baez herself had Scottish connections, though, didn't she?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Her, was it her father was minister at St. Mary's Cathedral in Edinburgh, the Episcopalian Cathedral.
Yeah.
Yeah, she had these connections, but she sang it. A great version, actually, like, lovely guitar, a sort of almost bluegrassy, not quite, but almost clawhammer-style guitar playing, actually, on it. It's a great version.
Almost as if she was listening to a song or playing a song from the Appalachians.
Yeah, exactly. But what's interesting about these versions here, Joan Baez's version differs from Dylan's because she brings in this thing which appeared in Cecil Sharp's version where there is a threat comes into it. So the last verse that she sings is, if ever I return, pretty Peggy-o, if ever I return, pretty Peggy-o, if ever I return, all your cities I will burn, destroying all the ladies in the area. So there's a threat for you.
That's really interesting because it takes away the agency from the woman, from the girl saying, right, this is it, you're not getting it, and her the poor captain just pining away a little bit.
Well,
and actually starts reasserting an aggressive invading force who are quite happy to burn and pillage, basically.
Interestingly, in that, so in the previous verse, the captain has died. So this is our narrator, the other soldier, looking on, going,
ah, right,
basically,
okay.
You failed to agree to go away with our captain, and he died of a broken heart. So now I'm coming for you. You sort of thing. I mean, it's really threatening. But one of my favourite versions, actually, is the Simon and Garfunkel version, which is a year after that. So 1964, on their first album, they have a version, again, Pretty Peggy-o. But it's a lovely version. I mean, I'm a sucker for Simon and Garfunkel, but gorgeous harmonies, as you can imagine. But again, at the end of this one, we haven't got the captain dead, so it's the captain who's singing, and he again says, if ever I return, all your cities I will burn, destroying all the ladies. And when in their version, which is quite a slow version, well, it's not slow, but it's a kind of medium-paced version, it's certainly not strident. Two vocals all the way through. Paul Simon's doing the sort of lead line in his sort of gentle tenor, and above that is the angelic Art Garfunkel. And as they sing, you know, if ever I return, all your cities I will burn, destroying all the ladies. I mean, it sounds really sinister when they do it in that. The juxtaposition of the the gorgeous harmonies. So it's a lovely, lovely version, that one, I think.
It's really interesting that you get the song, you know, it's in Scotland and it has this Irish dragoon who is rejected, I'm not going to a foreign land and all that kind of stuff. It goes over to Ireland, the girl's kind of at fault because actually he's an Irish dragoon, so he must be a decent guy. And then it travels to America, it's like, well, he's an Irish dragoon, he was probably a red coat, that means he must be one of the bad guys. And the song just adapts quite fluidly, just shifts gears, yeah. Shifts everything else to sort of fit the people that are singing it. And it's just that lovely kind of oral morphing process. The song that keeps the song alive.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. There's one just other, I think, notable thing. Perhaps because when I found it out, I thought it was quite unusual. This song was a regular in Grateful Dead sets for about 30 years or so. And so they did a version, again, Pretty Peggy-o, but they sing the Funerio. They kind of changed the lyrics over the years. They kind of adapted things.
I love the fact that some of the place names, you know, like the idea of the Howacht or Less and the Geirio, it's, you know, so people that just see it ever printed always sing it with Geirioch, oh, but it's the Geirio.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love the fact that apparently this has led to people, like Ocht or Less was corrupted when it went over to Ireland and became something else.
Ocht or Glass, I think, and, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And then, you know, just the idea that I think it's the Brazegicht became the Brassergite.
Yeah.
There's a weird thing that it morphed into something completely different. And again, it's that oral process. It's like if you hear something and you don't know what it relates to, well, you're just going to sing something that's kind of close to it, and yeah, it's going to be fine.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The drums, they did beat all across the Blazer Key, and the pipes played the Lowlands of Fife-y-o.
The long year we come to old Meldrum too, we had our captain to carry you. And long ere we come to Ballyburden, we had our captain to bury you.
I green grow the birds on bonny Ifan side, low by the lowlands of Fife-y-o. Our captain's name was Ned, and he died for a pain. He died for the charmer made of Fife-y-o.
There you have it then, folks. I hope you've enjoyed our little tour through the Bonnie Lass of Fife-y. I think we've now established completely, with great certainty, that it's definitely a Scottish song, definitely from the northeast, and any versions and anyone that says otherwise are just plain wrong. quite obviously. Anyway, if you want, after you've hearing us dissect and discuss other people's versions, if you want to hear our version of the Bonnie Lass of Fife-y, it's available online, and the Scottish Song Guide website has a few extra resources as well if you're interested. I really hope you enjoyed this. It's certainly been a lot of fun for us. So see you soon, I hope.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.